Roanoke's voice greeted him.
Look out, every beast. It's Tibor the Magic Rabbit, fresh from his Corsair debut.
Magic Rabbit yourself, you old stripe hound.
Balor helped himself to a large wild cherry flan.
Well, chaps and chapesses, the jolly old wheeze worked. We open tomorrow night in the main courtyard of Fortress Marsh Ballyank. Leave it to the Quinswold, eh, what?
Balor, you deserve 3 hearty cheers.
Feldo shook his head admiringly. The theatrical hare's ears stood up indignantly.
Stow the applause. I'd sooner have 3 hearty suppers and some decent cordial to wash away the taste of that Corsair seaweed ale. Dreadful swill. That Captain Clogg's chaps aren't going to last long drinking that stuff. Deary me, no. They'll end up warped or rotted, take my word.
Under a quarter moon on clifftop still warm from the day's sun, the rambling rosehip players rehearsed for the following night's performance. Feldo and Brome learned the business quickly. They had to.
Chapter 15.
More than a day's journey south on those same clifftops, Martin and his friends camped for the night. Unable to risk a fire in strange and possibly hostile territory, they sprawled wearily at the edge of a small scrubby woodland that grew up almost to the cliff edge. Grum massaged his ample stomach as it gurgled plaintively.
Excuse hoy. My tummy's a-thinking my mouth has forgotten how to eat.
Rose propped herself up on 2 paws.
What I wouldn't give for a plain, ordinary oatmeal scone spread with honey right now.
The scone hit Rose on the head, landing on the ground beneath her nose. She sat up, looking at it with astonishment.
Where in the name of apples and acorns did that come from?
Grum picked it up and took a bite.
Bird is still warm and spreaded with honey too.
Oi, can I have one too?
Hallam called out cheekily into the darkness. No sooner had he spoken than a scone thudded on the ground by him. The hedgehog chuckled with delight, not questioning where the food came from. Palin was a simple soul, practical too.
Go on, Martin, have a go. Ask for one.
The young mouse was standing alert and upright, and Balor's small sword in his paw. He peered into the darkness, murmuring,
Yes, I'd like a scone with honey. Wouldn't mind something to drink too. Strawberry cordial would be nice.
The scone struck his foot paw. He did not see which direction it came from. As he bent to get it, a voice called out of the woods.
You can have the scone, my dears, but I bain't throwing my good beakers about and spilling drinks either in yon or no.
Grum leaped up, waving his ladle, which he had retrieved from the pygmy shrews.
I'd be doing that speak. 'Tis a mole like I.
A mole came plodding out of the darkness. She was dressed in an oversized mob cap and a huge flowery pinafore.
Or I bain't nothing like you, maester. I'd be just like I, Polykin.
She sat on the grass beside them, wiping her paws on the flowered apron and conversing as if they had always been there.
My heart, 'twas an hot summer day today, it surely were. I was gathering up his scones after cooling them off in his shade when I heard some beast a-longing for scones, so I throwed him some.
Oh, you're so kind, Polykin. Thank you.
The mole stood up, dusting herself off busily.
I expect you're well hungered and thirsty, too. Young uns allus are, particularly travellers. Come on, then, home with I.
They introduced themselves and told Polykin their story as she led them to her dwelling in the wood. Grum looked up at it, hardly able to believe his eyes.
My seasons! A molar living up in a tree?
Polykin did actually live up in a tree. It was an old dead oak that had fallen at a crazy angle against a tall rocky outcrop. The trunk was practically a stairway. They followed her up to a large comfortable room built between 3 thick boughs. It was floored with driftwood and cordage and roofed with the same material, tightly chinked with moss, earth and leaf packing to keep out wind and weather. The walls were formed by the foliage of the surrounding trees, skillfully woven together. They sat on a low mossy branch, broad enough to be a bed, listening to Polykin chatter as she prepared their supper.
I be all alone in the world now. Family growed, tribe gone. So I do as I likes with myself, living in a tree, fearing no beast, and giving welcome to most or I.
The supper, when it came, was little less than spectacular. Strawberry cordial, dandelion and burdock beer, and hot mint tea. From a small stone charcoal-fed oven, the homely mole produced a stew, of carrot, turnips, peas and leeks, a large cottage loaf, and a button mushroom turnover garnished with parsley. From her larder came a dark, heavy fruit cake with maple cream topping and an assortment of wildberry tartlets. She bustled about, laying them on the floor.
Get thy jaws round that little lot, or you allus keeps victuals in plenty, yer. You'd be apprised at ye visitors I gets, my dears.
Conversation and talk went out of the leaf-screened windows as they applied themselves to the business of serious eating. Pollykin watched them, rocking back and forth on a springy bough and tapping her old digging claws together. Only when they had slowed down to the picking stage did she venture to speak.
They critters you'm be a-looking for bait past this ways.
Rose sighed as she poured herself some of the fragrant mint tea.
I hope they're safe and well, Pollykin.
The mole closed her eyes, nodding slowly.
Oh, they're safe enough and all right for a moment, missy. Never fret.
Palin stared at her curiously.
How do you know?
Still nodding and smiling with closed eyes, the mole spoke.
I knows lots of things, but I don't know why I knows them. Places, faces, happenings and all manner of things runs in and out of my old head. Like bee folks in and out of the hives.
Martin stared fixedly at the wise old mole, his food forgotten.
Yes, I had a feeling when we first met that you were not ordinary.
Pollykin shrugged, opening one eye to look at Martin.
Or he can't help it, maester. You'm be a worrier beast liking thy daddy afore you. That little knife bain't his sword. You'm got a long ways to go afore yon sword comes back to ye. Don't make you'm lessen a worrier, though. I seen girt brave warriors in my long seasons, but none like you, Martin.
The mole went into a doze then. She talked no more. When they had finished eating, they lay back on the broad, comfortable bough and were soon asleep. Moonlight filtered through the leaves onto the faces of the four friends as they slumbered. Pollykin moved silently, touching each of their faces tenderly. She shook her head and wiped her eyes on the flowery apron.
Poor younguns, so much harpiness and sadness afore ye. If an only you knowed, I be glad my seasons are near run, and I don't have to carry other beasts' lives around in my old head for long now.
Martin opened his eyes to the song of small birds, with dawn's sun filtering green and gold through the leafy walls of the treehouse. Rising silently, he climbed down to the woodland floor. There was a cool spring rising out of the rocks, bubbling its way into a small pool. The young mouse swilled his face and paws, shaking away the droplets and drying off with a pawful of grass. Pollykin bustled past with a small rush basket.
Morning, Sir Martin. Looky, little mushrooms, celery, lettuce and early hazelnutters, green and some dandelion and crabapples.
Palam appeared, looking into the basket and nodding hungrily.
Mmm, they look lovely and fresh.
The old mole wife slapped his paw away as he reached for a young button mushroom.
Grr, you young roguer. Hold still till I make thou breakfast.
Grum and Rose took a hurried wash at the spring. Shaking themselves dry, they scrambled swiftly back up to the treehouse for breakfast. Pollykin could work wonders with vegetables, and she did. They feasted on mushroom and celery soup garnished with young dandelion petals, followed by the scones she had baked the day before, now well soaked through with honey. Rose poured crabapple cider for them as the old mole began outlining her luncheon menu.
I'll bake a girt cake with wild plum and damson from my last autumn larder. And meadow cream a-plenty to go with it.
I'm driver sorry, ma'am, but hasn't be gone afore long.
Pollykin wiped hefty digging claws on her apron.
Aye, so you'm shall. Though I dearly wish he would stay your widow a while, perhaps 2 days or more.
Rose sat next to the old mole wife, patting her back.
I wish we could stay forever, Pollykin, but we must get to searching for my brother Brome and our friend Feldo. That is, if they still live.
I told you last night, Mizzy. They two be alive and well. Don't ask me how I knows, because I couldn't tell ye. But take my word, I knows it for sure. You three critters be best travelling straight for Noonvale. Stay away from ye vermin fort. Bad fortune awaits ye there if you return.
Martin leaned forward.
What sort of bad fortune, Pollykin?
The old one closed her eyes, rocking back and forth.
Nay, Sir Martin, 'tis not for I to say, lest I be a-telling lies, and my old memory be playing tricks like it do sometimes.
The friends did not pursue the question further, though Rose had a request to make of Pollykin.
You told us to travel to Noonvale. I, for one, think it a good idea. But I'm afraid I haven't the foggiest idea where it is from here. We're completely lost. Can you help us?
The mole opened her eyes. Moving slowly about, she began rummaging through her larders and stores.
I'm no good at marking and making writing, missy. You're take this and mark as I say, while I make up thy supplies.
Rose took the proffered bark cloth and charcoal stick. With great care, the mouse maid wrote everything down, sometimes making Polikin repeat things two or three times until she was satisfied. The old mole wife gave out her instructions almost grudgingly as she went about the business of making up four packs of provisions. Palin watched her, shaking his head and smiling fondly.
What a wonderful old mole wife. I bet even squidgies would be nice to her. My heart and stomach is longing to stay longer in this place with Polikin. But we've got to go. Still, I'll make myself a promise by my spikes that I'll return here some day and taste their cooking again.
Mid-morning sunlight lanced through the gently swaying foliage as Polikin wandered silently off to replenish her larders. The four friends sat studying the message she had dictated to Rose. Grum smiled sheepishly.
I'm dreadful ignorant at wording, Miss Rosa. Can you read it to I?
Follow your front shadow, do not stop, till you reach the one with dead three top. See the twin paths, beware of one. Sweet as the spreading atop of a scone. Camp close by night, watch out by day, for the three-eyed one who bars the way. More you will not learn until meeting the warden of Marshwood Hill.
Martin scratched his chin thoughtfully.
I wish Polikin would have explained it a little clearer.
Rose shrugged.
She doesn't want us to go. The poor old creature loves to have company. However, knowing that we must carry on and find Noonvale, she did the best she could with her rhyme. Let's take it a bit at a time as we go. Follow your front shadow, do not stop. What in the name of seasons is a front shadow?
Palam shouldered his pack.
I think it's when the sun is at our back and the shadow we throw is in front of us. Come on, let's make a start. Now let me see.
He looked up at the sun, calculating which way it would travel.
This way, straight into the woodland. In 2 hours, the sun will be at our backs.
Grum picked up his pack reluctantly.
But where's Miss Polikin?
Rose pointed into the scrubby thickness surrounding them.
Somewhere in there, having a quiet sulk, I shouldn't wonder. Oh, well, I don't blame her. I feel pretty bad about leaving here myself, but we must go. I'll sing her a farewell. She'll hear it, I'm sure.
The friends set off into the warm midday. Martin kept his eyes on the country ahead, listening admiringly to Rose's beautiful singing voice.
Goodbye, my friend, and thank you, thank you, thank you. It makes me sad to leave you upon this summer day. Don't shed a tear or cry now, goodbye now, goodbye now. I'm sure I'll see you somehow if I pass by this way. For the seasons don't foretell who must stay or say farewell, and I must find out what lies beyond this place.